I like to move it, move it.
Welcome back once again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to my final dispatch from the Overlook Film Festival, covering days 3 and 4. I've combined these into one episode for a few reasons. The first one being that I did not see a whole lot of movies on day 3, because I spent 2.5 hours in line making sure that I got in to Evil Dead Rise. I did not want to miss it. Spoiler alert, I totally got in. I was first in line. And, yeah, thank God, because it was worth it. It was totally cool, but we'll get into that shortly. The other reason is because film festivals are goddamn exhausting. And by the end of day 3, I just had nothing left in me in order to record. And then I had a full day of 4 movies for day 4. But everything I saw, at the very least, was ass-kicking adjacent, if not fully ass-kicking on its own. But let's start with the Saturday movies. The first thing that I saw was a presentation put on by the Museum of Home Video. Check out the Museum of Home Video. They do a weekly stream of home video acquisitions and strange things and just wild stuff. To put it this way, the first thing that they exhibited for us from the Museum of Home Video was a 10-minute-long supercut of any time that anybody in the movie Poltergeist 3 said anyone else's name. And so a lot of Carol Ann, Carol Ann, Carol Ann, Carol Ann, Carol Ann, Carol Ann. And it was one of those things that starts out funny and then goes on so long that you just go, Jesus Christ. And then it gets really funny again, really maniacal stuff, but that gives you a sense of what it is that the Museum of Home Video does. They've corralled a bunch of commercials and, you know, just lost footage from weird broadcasts and shit like that. But the main event that they were putting on was a, we'll call it feature length supercut called Ring Ring, a Doorbell Cam Fantasia. And what this was a collection of just doorbell camera footage. And the reason why this was probably included in the Overlook programming is because doorbell cam footage, while uniquely hilarious, is also uniquely disturbing. The things that a camera catches at 3 in the morning, you simply would not believe. It kind of reminded me of the Dash Cam movie that came out a few years ago. Not Dash Cam, which is a movie in and of itself, but I think it was called like the Russian Dashboard Camera movie, where it was a mix of horrifying things and a mix of fascinating things. Like, on the fascinating end of things, there was just footage of a rogue hot air balloon landing in someone's front yard. On the hilarious end of things was a piece of footage that captured a very drunk man in front of his house accidentally spoiling a surprise birthday party for his father who arrived. But most of it was unsettling, which was just creepy people at night staring into cameras, sometimes dressed as clowns. People with weapons knocking on doors trying to get in and either getting in or failing to get in. A lot of people who seem to be powered entirely by crack cocaine make their way to late night, doorbell camera stuff. But, really the kind of thing that, it just rocks with a crowd because, you know, everyone is equally uncomfortable as they are, feeling the comedy of it all. It was, I don't know what the output is going to be on this, like what the release is going to be like. This may have just been unique to the festival. If it does come out in any sort of downloadable or purchasable format, you better believe I will be first in line for that to do so. But otherwise, just check out the Museum of Home Video. They do a weekly stream in which they do a lot of fun stuff like that. And if their goal in exhibiting Ring Ring was to get new subscribers, then it was definitely a success because they immediately got a subscriber out of me. I'm a subscriber. Second movie I saw was the one that I waited 2.5 hours in line to make sure I got into, which was Evil Dead Rise. This is officially within the canon of the Sam Raimi trilogy. I know that the 2013 reboot is not officially in the canon. It's considered a remake. Honestly, to tell you the truth, it is as connected to the original series as Evil Dead Rise is. I think of it as a sequel because it's just a different group of people found the Necronomicon and unleash the deadites upon their locale. In this case, that is, it's very much the case here. It's instead of a log cabin, though, now it is a high-rise apartment building. Sort of like Poltergeist 3. And this is written and directed by Lee Cronin, who did The Hole in the Ground, which I have not seen, but I would really like to see, especially in the shadow of Evil Dead Rise. And I think what's most impressive about this is probably the most important goal that it had is that it needed to be as brutal and gruesome as the reboot was, but it also needs to fit tonally within the same wheelhouse as Raimi's original trilogy. And I think it does find a pretty solid middle ground between the two. It's closer in tone to The Evil Dead than it is to Army of Darkness, say. But that's not to say that there isn't Three Stooges-esque physicality being worked into stuff. You know, there's nothing expressly humorous the way that Bruce Campbell's Ash Williams was, but there's a certain way that the deadites carry themselves that is of a piece with Raimi's original vision. And so, yeah, it doesn't really land anything thematically. It's a pretty straightforward story. So it's closer to the original trilogy in that regard, that it's just meant to be a gruesome, bloody funhouse. It didn't do any sort of thematic connections like the 2013 reboot did, where they tried to bring an addiction narrative into it. And I would say we're mostly successful in doing so, but Evil Dead lives and dies by practical blood effects, creepy voice effects, and the deadites being agents of chaos. Because if you try to follow the rules of an Evil Dead movie, there's not really any hard and fast rules. It's not like a blood-to-blood contact thing. It's not if they bite you, if they grab you. You know, you can get possessed by a pencil stabbing if you want. But it really just seems that the deadites are able to freely possess who they want. And they just seem to choose to only possess the people that have the most chaotic results of the possession. The only resistance being if you're a snarky badass. That seems to be the way to resist being possessed. Evil Dead Rise is profoundly cruel. Really, nobody is safe. There's a lot of kids in this movie. And not all of them are spared. And the ones that aren't spared are... they're very much not spared. It is absolutely brutal stuff. But this is what you want in an Evil Dead movie. Everybody has been talking about the cheese grater scene. It's been in all of the press. And I will say that in the moment, the cheese grater scene, I won't spoil, is not as excessive as I expected it to be. But in the few days since seeing the movie, I have thought about the cheese grater multiple times and gotten chills. So I think that it is a success. This is the kind of movie that I would love to watch again, and I would love to watch someone else watch it. One of the stars of Evil Dead Rise is, I'm going to pull up her name for you now, but she was in Monolith, another movie that I saw at the festival. The actress's name is Lily Sullivan. And, yeah, she's really good in Monolith, and she's really good here. It was good to see her a few times over the course of the fest. Next up, this one I almost didn't go see. I almost didn't go see The Elderly. And The Elderly is... I thought it was going to be like a slow burn foreign drama and all that, which is fine. I'm totally into that. But it was coming up late night after Evil Dead Rise, when we're all jacked up on the energy of Evil Dead. And I thought this was going to be a disappointment, and it ended up being one of my more favorites of the fest. So this is directed by Raul Cerezo and Fernando González Gómez. I'm assuming this is a Hispanic movie of some sort. Basically what this is there's a heat wave, and during this heat wave, all of the elderly people in this one town start to exhibit strange qualities, we'll say. And it is about a family that has come upon rough times that invites their octogenarian grandfather to move in with them during this heat wave. And so the family drama is really what fuels the plot, but it's ultimately the plot that sticks with me, because this escalates at a pretty regular clip and culminates in a pretty ridiculous closing moment that had my jaw on the floor. This is one that I would love to rewatch, knowing what the ending is, just so I can look for clues of it and try to decode certain things about it. But the original title in Spanish is Viejos, but The Elderly, I imagine this is probably going to pop up on Shudder or something sometime soon, and when it does, I'm going to give it another watch for sure. Day four, I squeezed in four movies. One of them, the first one, is called The Artifice Girl. I'm going to look it up so I can get the names right. This one I also did not really know anything about it going into it, except that Lance Henriksen, legend, shows up. And, wow, it just doesn't even show up in IMDb. Artifice. There it is, The Artifice. Oh, and it disappeared. I hate when it does that. The Artifice Girl, there we go. Written and directed by Franklin Rich, who is also one of the stars of it. And it takes place over the course of three acts, each of which are just like single location vignettes. But it follows a team of special agents as they develop a revolutionary AI program that takes the form of a 12-year-old girl. And she's essentially used to bait and gather information on pedophile rings, and ultimately is an extremely effective tool at doing so. The thing is, in order for her to be effective, she also has to be a secret. And so this movie follows the acquisition of Cherry, is her name, the acquisition of her, the implementation of her, and then in the third act, the long-term consequences of her. And, actually, I said her a lot. This would pair well with a movie like Her. It would also pair well with a movie like Ex Machina, in that it asks some pretty compelling questions and ruminates on some pretty compelling ideas involving the ethical considerations of AI. When it first started, my initial thought was that the performances were really good, but it didn't seem to be going anywhere that I didn't expect. But I was dead wrong. Because ultimately, it really does expand on this concept in ways that are really thoughtful, thematically dense. This is definitely, like, nutritious story-wise. And it's another one that, again, if I were to watch it a second time, I imagine it would take on a brand new flavor. And I would highly recommend anybody checking this out. And you get to see Lance Henriksen still. He's still out there making genre shit. You gotta love that guy. Still going. From Millennium till now. From Pumpkinhead until now. The Artifice Girl. Number two, second movie I saw on day four, was called Accused. This is up there towards the top of my Film Fest favorites. And there's so many goddamn movies called Accused that to try and... Here we go, Accused. Directed by Philip Barantini and written by... Oh, this is a great name. Barnaby Bolton. Sounds like a Game of Thrones character. Barnaby Bolton and James Cummings. And this follows a man named Harry, played by Shanil Kular. He's a Middle Eastern man who takes a London train to his parents' house while they go on vacation so he can do some house sitting for them. Unfortunately for our friend Harry here, after he leaves the London station on the train, a terrorist attack occurs, and due to a mistaken identity and a doxing campaign, he is incorrectly and quite quickly ID'd as a potential suspect. So the movie sort of begins as a cautionary tale of racism, of doxing, of mob justice, but then it morphs into a home invasion thriller as this doxing campaign alerts his current whereabouts, where he is alone in a large, somewhat unfamiliar house, as a couple of people seeking their own perverted form of justice are trying to break in and hurt, injure, potentially kill him. This is a breathlessly intense movie, made that much more effective by the fact that you could just see it happening. You could totally see it happening. The way that people get when the mob mentality kicks out, the anonymity that comes from being online, that is stripped away from the victim of a doxing campaign, and enhanced by the fact that people make assumptions based on things like race and such, is it's really brutal. It's a heartbreaking movie. It's very sad, but it's also quite thrilling, quite intense. Scratches every itch that something like Them or, you know, The Strangers, which that's not a good reference. I don't like that movie. But, you know, any sort of a home invasion movie, it scratches those itches, but adds more story than you're typically used to in this sort of thing. So it delivers on genre delights and ends up being a super thoughtful movie as well. Extremely well performed, very thoughtfully made, and just like, I don't know what the record for holding one's breath is, but if it's shorter than 88 minutes, then everyone who is in the theater with me are the new world record holders, because it is intense. I loved this one, and I think Mubi put it out. Mubi had their name on a lot of stuff during the fest, which is really good to see, because Mubi puts out a good product, and they've been finding a lot of good things. I know they were responsible for releasing Decision to Leave last year, so highly recommend Accused, and it's a lean, mean 88 minutes in and out, but you will not soon forget it. And it ends on a note that one of the strongest, most powerful endings of anything at Overlook Fest was the ending to Accused. It really, really comes to a strong, pointed close that I think will make a lot of people, myself included, look inward. The next movie I saw was the only one that was actually, I would say, the exhibition hurt the movie itself for multiple reasons, and it was really nobody's fault, but it was a Mongolian film called Aberrance, one of the more gorgeously shot movies of the festival. This one's a tough cookie to crack, or a tough nut to crack, I don't know, tough cookie, whatever, I mixed up my cliches. The writer-director Batar Batsuk had a really nice introduction to the movie beforehand, co-written alongside Byambe Surin Ganbat, Alexa Khan, Erdin Oroso, and Trevor Doyle. A couple of those are more responsible for the translation than for anything else. But some of the most dynamic, perhaps the most dynamic camera work of any film at Overlook. And it's about a couple that is kind of estranged, going on like a refreshing vacation in the woods. But there's a neighbor that you don't really know whether or not to trust. Everyone's kind of in the dark as to who to trust and why. And I think that includes the audience. But the reason is not necessarily because of the movie itself. It's because the angle of the chairs in this particular theater were in such a way that everyone had to kind of kneel on the seats and crane their neck in order to see the subtitles. So the fact that there was a physical, logistical challenge to see the subtitles, I think made what was an already cryptic movie a little bit harder to get into. Just one of those things that just is what it is, and you just got to deal with it. But I think I saw enough to understand that I would really like to see this again. I would like to see it just in a venue where, you know, I can sit back and relax and take it in, as opposed to like working to watch it. That said, I'm on the hook for anything else that this filmmaker makes, because it really is beautifully shot. Just incredible widescreen digital photography that, you know, it honestly looked like something like It Follows in terms of, you know, actually using the bells and whistles of digital photography to have strong composition. And that's very much in play here. It's also an hour and 15 minutes. So chef's kiss for a movie that just gets you in and out. A lot of striking images from this one have stuck with me. But I can't really speak too much more on it unless I see it again due to the limitations that were in place. And now we come to the final film of the Overlook Film Festival. This is a rather interesting event, because it's not a new movie. It's not a premiere or anything like that. In fact, it is an extremely old movie. It's a movie that came out when my Nana was one. So this was 1927, the silent Alfred Hitchcock thriller The Lodger, A Story of London Fog. Cool movie. Definitely, it's 92 minutes, which is pretty long for, a silent movie from this era, but it's very well done. It's the tale of a landlady that thinks that one of her new lodgers is potentially this Jack the Ripper-like killer that has been terrorizing London. Any dialogue is done through on-screen dialogue cards, but there's very few of those. Everything is more intuited. The reason this was playing at Overlook, though, was not because of any new release or anything like that. No, none of that. It was because they played it fully silent, but with a live band sitting in the theater, improvising a new score for the movie. So the band is called Think Less, Hear More, and they do this sort of thing all the time. And they rocked hard. Damn good musicians. And the what they were able to create in terms of building a mood for the movie is nothing short of astonishing, especially since they were not a like an orchestral band. It was a synthesizer keyboard, a trombone, a guitar player. The one guy had like a percussion box that he would smack on a little bit, but that was it. So they kind of had like a synth jazz thing going, which you would not think would match up with this sort of a film, being that it's so old and, analog and all that. But to their credit, there was points during the movie where I was wrapped up in the story, wrapped up in the experience of watching the movie, so much so that I forgot there was a band in the room. Even though I could literally see the band, you would forget. That's how good they were at intuiting what was happening. And I highly recommend looking up Think Less, Hear More, because they've done this a few times. I know they did it at last year's Overlook, but they also, on their website, they've done it with a bunch of other things as well. Just fascinating stuff, and I'm sure they have original music too. I have not had a chance to look into it because I've been traveling, but it amazes me that people can improv music alone, let alone with one another, let alone in reaction to a movie, creating what's happening live. Just a remarkable feat of creativity. And as far as closing night events for the Overlook Film Fest goes, you really can't be beat. I was sadly unable to get to the Uptown Theater in time to see The Tingler in full Percepto vision, but I think this was actually a really solid replacement in terms of fun events. But now I gotta get to writing, because I got a whole lot of shit to write about. But I thank you to everybody who tuned in to my dispatches from Overlook Film Festival. We're gonna have a new episode, classic style, coming up in a couple weeks, where me, Steven, and our buddy Joe are gonna be going through all of the lore of John Wick. So we definitely wanna tune back in for that once we've all had a chance to see John Wick Chapter 4, which fucking rocks, by the way. And, pop on to scullyvision.com. You'll see updates from the podcast. You'll see updates of some words coming out your way from Overlook. I've got a lot of reviews coming out, so you'll definitely want to check those out. Give them a read. Check out Hot Property. And I guess that's pretty much it. I'm actually about to record a Hot Property now. But yeah, log into the website. In a couple weeks, there's probably going to be some coverage from the Film Society's Spring Fest, so you want to check that out as well. But most of all, just a big, huge thank you to Overlook Film Festival for having me, for putting on such an event. It actually went really smoothly, as these things go. And shout out to the lovely city of New Orleans, who pumped me full of absolutely delicious, horribly unhealthy food, for which I am currently in recovery. And oh, and shout out to the Courtyard Brewery. Closing night, I ran over there and had a couple beers before I went back to my hotel room, and all of them were really exceptional. So if you're in that area in New Orleans, definitely check that out. I'll hit links to all of the stuff that I mentioned in the show notes for Museum of Home Video and all that shit. But thank you guys so much, and have yourselves a Merry Little Christmas. No, that's not the way. That's it's fucking March. Have yourselves a wonderful day.